Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are a sub-science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking about digital nomads, people who are working from abroad. It's become a lot more popular since the pandemic, so we're going to see what the impact of that has been. Has it helped economies, hurt local economies? Is it good or bad? But first, we'll be talking about pigs, was that what it was? And daylight savings time.
Whoa, pigs and daylight savings time sounds like a bad pub.
Oh my God, you want to meet at pigs and daylight savings time?
It actually does. It sounds like one of those... I can't think of any. The Fox and the Fiddle, or like...
Yeah, that's a great... What are the other the ones? Most quintessential. Well, like, it's like anything. It's always like so the many, boar and the crumpet.
Yeah. Pigs and daylight savings time.
That would be like a really dank pub where you'd get warm beer, hot take. That's what British people actually drink. I still can't believe the first time I went to a pub in London and then I got a beer and everyone got beer and it was warm. It was just like... So you're all sick in the head.
But like, are you sure that's what everyone drinks or it's just like...
Well, it was ordered for me because they were saying, let's get a pint. Let's get a cheeky pint. And they brought it to me and I was like, oh, I think there must be something wrong. And they were like, no, we like this. And it was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Sick. Yeah. A lot of taste in this country. Wow. Why do I always...
You just love to hate. Colonial. You're such a hater.
I'm a hater of myself. Everyone hates themselves. And I hate the Commonwealth. And I just am so... Commonwealth.
I have not really spent much time in London as an adult, at least. Like, I visited you once when you were teaching there. But outside of that, I feel like I'd like to go and just, like, get a vibe.
Yeah, and listen to our older podcast for What Did We Learn This Week? Was about how it's going to be underwater in the future if you don't figure out climate change. That's a spook for all, yeah? London's a sleigh. It's a huge international city. There's really nothing you can make fun of it for, except it has a horrible nightlife. The food's just okay. It's really gray in the winter. It's really expensive.
Slowly losing all our supporters from around the world. One I know, episode it's like, at a time.
When you look at who listens to this podcast, it's like the most is obviously America, Canada, and then the second is Australia, and the third is London, is the UK, and I'm just like dragging them. It's like, why am I doing that? That's the Stop. Opposite of...
Yeah. I love all countries.
No, but you love... Like, well, it's not my fault, I have opinions. No, you love... What you
nice.
Are. No, I... Wait, what is it? I hate what I
well,
love.
I'm half South Asian, so I like have, you know, I was also colonized in multiple ways by the British.
Yeah, you should definitely not like the British. But then you're also the colonizer.
Yeah.
That's complicated.
It's a complicated relationship.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. even, yeah, when we went to India and you saw like the grave of your grandfather, it was like a British grave.
It wasn't actually the grave of my grandfather. Oh. Just had the same last name. And I was like, maybe that's like my great, 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 great.
Yeah. And then when we looked it up, it was like the most famous colonizer like of the place. We were like, oh, gulp.
Oops. Yeah. I was just like, quite as Indian as I thought.
Or no, I was just like, that's interesting. Yeah. Should we talk about daylight savings time? Because that's also what's on my mind. It's so dark in Toronto. It's wild.
Yeah. Why?
Oh, those are my empanadas. So you have to entertain the masses.
Well,
for
I'm like, I got to hit what 1 minute this week, right?
You yeah. Off, actually, but do it and I'll listen. But I'm just going to go take my empanadas out of the oven.
I did not hear a sound play at all. So if there was no jingle there, I'm sorry. So, okay. Well, Greg loves. Hates every country unless they have empanadas and speak Spanish. My What You Learn This Week, it might feel a little outdated. It's about daylight savings time. We're recording this ahead of time, so we just experienced this. But there, just before it happened, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine said their official stance is that it should be got rid of, that there needs to be permanent standard time. Specifically because of the increased risk of physical health, mental well-being, and public safety, which
don't like people die of car crashes.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least this one we just experienced where you're gaining an hour is probably a little easier to stomach, but especially when you jump forward and lose an hour of sleep, there's so many more accidents, hospitalizations, like all these kind of things because people's reaction times are worse and there's sleep
deprived. I'm so mad. I like got up in the morning and I was like 8:45, not 9:45. I gained an hour. I was so happy. Jumped right back into bed and then went on Twitter and then just wasted an hour. And then I was like, oh, it's 9:45. And then I was like in a rush again. And I was like, I hate myself.
But I agree. I just don't, I guess it was created so like the morning could be brighter when people are going to work.
But we don't have a real job, so we don't care.
Yeah, no, I understand the feeling of waking up in the dark and it being like treacherous, and I hate that feeling.
This morning is.
But basically, permanent standard time would help like have everyone synchronize body clock to the actual rising and setting of the sun. And that's optimal for like everything, like mood, performance, like your actual health. So that is their stance.
Yeah.
I concur.
I really just don't like daylight savings time. It's like, it's so dark early now. It's like, whether it's dark in the morning or it's dark at night, we can't help it. The sun's not like on us that much in Toronto. I don't care if it's in the morning or night. Just keep the time the same.
Yeah.
No one cares.
I think people would rather not lose the sleep, especially since you jump forward. I just realized why.
Oh,
Greg
the volume
was in
was
control
there.
Of the board today and he turned the volume all the way down.
Okay. This is like, well, this is a separate topic. Maybe it's just for a therapy session. Mitch has an insane problem where he can't. He has to blame everyone else his issues. It's crazy if
it's
you could live with me.
Crazy.
If there's something wrong in the living room. Well, kay. Greg, what'd you do? It's like, I don't know. Look in the mirror.
No, Greg.
That was my mistake. Who cares?
Okay, there we go.
Okay, I know that was my mistake. I'm just saying.
I'm just going to play it now so people can hear it.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
There we go.
I have it just talking about a separate thing. The other day, the garbage wouldn't come out of the bag, wouldn't come out of the garbage can. You're like, what did you do? I'm like, there's a plastic thing that's stuck there. Maybe you kept going, oh, oh. And you're like, you were like, furious at this garbage can. I'm like, calm down, be a little patient, shimmy it around a bit. You're like, well, what did you put in here? I'm like, it's a garbage can. It's half your garbage, half mine. I didn't do anything more than you.
So slammed with stuff. It
you're
couldn't even come out of
insufferable. Wow, I didn't sleep very well
you
last night.
You are mean to British people, to Australian people, and me.
I was also
those
like,
are the three things you are get most annoyed by.
I also was like,
that's
I
why
can,
I
can make up. Us lose more followers if we want. Because I saw the Taylor Swift movie and I was like,
okay,
I don't
we
get
have
it.
To
yeah,
move
like,
on.
I, like,
we're
going like,
to lose everyone.
Okay,
right?
But
just
should I
move
not?
To your Waterloo okay. This week.
So I'm not going to bring the Swifties into this. Okay. Okay. Did you know that there was like, what? This is like, my what?
Okay. We're moving on.
Okay.
Thanks, Greg.
My what this week is like very basic to start because I didn't know there was like wild European boars in Canada and they're a huge problem.
Where?
In Alberta. And now the issue is that this study found that they've been spotted in the Northwest Territories. And it's like now they're coming for the Northwest Territories. And they eat migrating birds who all nest there. And they're potentially one of the most dangerous invasive species in all of the Americas.
Wow. Never heard of it.
I know. And look
also,
at
also, though, like little side note, speaking of Alberta, apparently like so many like Calgarians and Albertans are starting to complain about Ontarians and Torontonians like migrating there and being like, stop trying to bring your lifestyle to Alberta. But everyone's like, There's fucking ads everywhere in Toronto on the subway being like, come to Christmas Town, come to the best city in the world. And like,
digital
now.
Nomad vibes. But
it is,
Canada.
Yeah. So like apparently like they are getting annoyed that people from Ontario.
Are they digital nomads and living?
No. Like so many people have moved to Alberta for like better jobs basically or like higher paying jobs. And just so if you're from Alberta, you understand like everywhere you go here, especially in Toronto, there's ads trying to convince people that Alberta is the place
that
to be.
That sucks. You show up because you're like, this ad worked on me. And then they're like, actually, we don't want you here. Yeah. So they're European wild boars that were brought to Canada in the 1980s because some farmers were like, we can raise them for meat. And then by mistake, they escaped and literally have just been like,
just
proliferating
like ran into the forest
all over. They're in Alberta. They're between Alberta and Quebec. Now they're in the Northwest Territories. And it's super scary because they eat all the vegetation. They don't have proper predators. And I was just like, what? I just didn't know about the wild boar problem in Canada.
I had no idea.
And now the world knows. And I know that a lot of people listening are
now,
from
now
Australia.
After this podcast, now the world knows.
And now Australian and British people, if you're still listening, you now know. Although I would be okay if you have, in fact, given up on us because I'm so mean. I'm also mean to Canada. It's like, that's embarrassing. It's like, no offense, Alberta. What's your culture? That's so different than Ontario's. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, we're Canadian. We don't like our culture is what Tim Hortons. Our culture is what like obliterating like a genocide of Indigenous people. Mm. I'm just like, I'm sorry. There isn't that much difference between Alberta and Ontario. IMO.
Like in the grand scheme of things.
I need to nap.
Yeah, are you okay?
I'm fine. I'm definitely
you're
like
testy.
Yeah, no, I'm pissed.
Spicy today.
Maybe I need an empanada. I mean, it's not nice to know there's wild pigs ruining Canada. I was like, I didn't need
to
know that.
Yeah, I guess that is sad.
Also vampire fish, that's another thing that's on here.
Those are like two invasive species?
They're another invasive species.
I was wondering, Greg has a picture of like a boar and then something that looks terrifying. And I was kind of thinking like, is that its hoof?
No,
but
it's
that's
a vampire
the
fish
mouth
that they
of a fish.
Yeah, and they stick on other fish and they're invasive. And they've been getting the colonies down pretty well. But the pandemic like made an issue like, with working across the borders because it was like a lot in the Great Lakes. So Canada and American scientists had to cross borders in order to do it. And since they couldn't, now they're like picking up again.
Humans are simultaneously so smart and so stupid.
Yeah. Put that, tattoo that on your butt cheek. It's so true. We're so smart and so dumb.
Yeah.
I started to watch Real Housewives.
So
and I was like, wow,
this
is actually the dumbest thing ever. But then I'm like, I can't look away.
Like,
and I'm
it's
like,
so
it's
smart.
Smart.
Okay. Break time.
Yeah.
And we'll come back for Digital Nomads.
If you take a look at the trends, interest in learning a new language is only increasing over time. And there tends to be a bit of a spike around this time of the year because it's a perfect time to pick up a new hobby, like learning a new language. And with Babbel, you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, just in time to show off at the holidays. I'm loving Babbel. I'm trying to learn Spanish as well as I can. We went to Barcelona recently. Babbel was getting me through ordering. It was getting me through meeting new people. And there were a few people who were like, are you Spanish? I was like, no, babes, just Babbel. So right now you can start speaking a new language with Babbel. Why Babbel? Because it works. Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for a private tutor or fooling yourself with language apps that are a little more than just games, Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove that Babbel is better. For instance, one study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/sidenote. Get 55% off at babbel.com/sidenote, spelled babbel.com/sidenote. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare.
PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Study time.
Study time.
Study time.
So where were you the first time you heard the term digital nomad?
I actually think it was, well, I think when we were in Colombia, I heard it like lightly, but it felt like on that, what are you looking at me like that?
I'm looking at you.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like.
With intention.
Okay. And on that same trip, we went to Argentina in Buenos Aires, is where I felt like I was so much more aware of it. Like,
wow, someone's been doing Babel. Buenos Aires. Yeah, it was definitely like the, I think for me too, this, it was 1 year ago. And
so
it
you're
was
copying
when we were in
me.
Colombia. No, but I'm just like, it is so.
So you're obsessed with me and you're copying my answer.
Oh my God. It's so post-pandemic vibes.
Yes, and that is like what most of the research suggests as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, people were like, oh, I'm working from home now pretty much a lot more. That's not proper English. I guess I know what that feels like now. I could probably do this from Bali or whatever.
Yeah, and just to give people context, if you haven't heard of digital nomads, like I know we kind of mentioned it up front, but the idea is there's, you know, a lot of people who realize during the pandemic that they can do their job entirely remotely. And so a lot of people, you know, whether you're in Canada, America, anywhere in the world, realize, okay, I could just pick up, go somewhere. Maybe it's somewhere warmer. Maybe it's somewhere with a different culture. Do my work from there. But while I'm having a sort of like travel, not like an intense travel experience, but living in another city.
It's giving also 20s to early 30s vibe slash maybe you're not like trying to build your life and have kids. Like it's very.
Yes,
right?
I have some interesting stats on that, though.
Oh, slay, go off.
Yeah, some study.
Well, I'm just going to start by saying that 4.8 million Americans are pursuing digital nomad work right now in either a full or part-time capacity.
What number did you say?
4.5 million.
I have 17.3 million Americans workers currently describe themselves as digital nomads.
Okay, whoa. Mine's from the MBO Partner State of Independence in America report.
Okay, mine, let me pull it up. Mine was from like a U of T study.
No, well, I have that 17.
MBO Partners, that's the same report I'm
17
using.
Million people aspire to be digital nomads.
Just, no, I'm on the website today.
Wow,
17.3
to
million
absolutely.
American workers currently describe themselves as digital nomads. Look at this fucking graph.
Whoa. Wait, okay. Mine says 17 million independent workers aspire to become digital nomads and 4.8 million Americans are already pursuing digital nomadic work in either a full or part-time capacity.
Well, is yours an outdated study?
Like, maybe, because yours is right now in front of us.
Yeah.
17. So then those aspiring ones from my study of 3 years ago are now
they've
doing
done it.
17 million. That's I thought 4.8 million was a lot.
No.
17 million Americans are across the world. And
was
see,
it the same site? MBO?
Yeah, MBO, literally.
Weird.
Maybe but you mine might be year. Old because mine's just me writing it out. Yours is right on the website.
Okay, so that, for example, is 131% up from pre-pandemic,
wow.
2019 to 2022.
Wow.
And then it
tis
said
a thing.
It's grown by 2% since 2022.
Wow. This so, other study predicted that by...
Well, we can't trust your studies.
Yeah,
these
no,
days.
I know. It was just from the same...
I'm kidding.
Well, I'm like, my study was just linking other ones. I didn't... This is just saying that 31% of all workers worldwide will... work remotely or at like hybrid workforce in 10 years.
Okay, I have nothing to dispute that.
Yeah, okay. But anyways, yeah, don't listen to me.
I
continue.
Brought this up because we were talking about like
kids.
Who is actually traveling. One big stat was obviously it's people who are not tethered in that way. Not just kids, but dogs or family members have to take care of. Like a lot of digital nomads are people who are able to just pick up and leave.
Yeah.
But they said Gen Z accounts for around 21%. Millennials account for 37%. And then the rest... are older.
Oh.
So that's still combined more than 50% is like young people,
yeah.
But like a huge chunk of
Yeah.
Gen X and beyond are also digital nomads. And maybe in some ways they're the people who have the most affluence to be able to do it. You know what I mean? They've like accrued their career. They're maybe able to like, you're giving
I
a look again where I'm like,
no, I'm like, could you be a, I guess you could just be a digital nomad with your whole family and kids.
You could be.
That just seems crazy.
Yeah, it would uproot your kids' lives. Like if they have to change schools, not speak the native language.
Like, oh, we're gonna go move to Columbia for a year, and you're gonna go to school in Columbia. I'd be like, that's insane. Like if you're a kid, you'd be like, what? Really speak English?
But I mean, a lot of families do that. Even if they're not digital nomads, like because of parents' jobs, they have to get up and go somewhere else.
That's so true.
Maybe it's more and more common now, but not to say that's an easy thing. I know.
And whenever I meet those kids who are like, I grew up in this country and this country and that country, I'm always like, you're actually kind of cool. So like they like have a swag.
They're for sure examples in my life where I'm like, wow, you are smart and you're interesting and you know so much. But other times when you're like, you are weird.
Okay, interesting. I guess it's like everything. There could be outliers. No, you're right. It doesn't like make your kid cool, but I just in my head thought it would. But yeah.
Maybe as a young person, when I met people like that, they were weird because they were weird beyond me. You know what I mean? Like they actually
they were like, have you ever had ramen? And you were like, what word is that?
I'm like, you mean Mr. Noodle? Yeah. Yes, I have that every day. By the way, for our international audience, Mr. Noodle is what we call ramen in Canada. Like the package kind. Oh my God,
Mitch. Like we don't have an editor, but edit this out.
What?
Mr. Noodle is not what we call ramen in Canada. It's a random ass, like,
if you get like a little package of fake ramen in Canada, it's probably Mr. Noodle.
If you choose to buy Mr. Noodle, which is your favorite food of all time, there's choices to be made, and it's just okay, we're moving on.
Okay,
we'll do an episode on Mr. Noodle.
I need the Canadians to chime in. Like, I'm not talking about going to get real ramen, like from a ramen shop. I mean, growing up in university, these times when you're like eating these noodles because they're so cheap. It's like,
I know what Mr. Noodle is.
I need people to back me up and be like, yeah, Mr. Noodle is top choice. Top
shelf.
Okay,
that's different than going to Barcelona, which we'll talk about soon, and being like, oh, wow, you have ramen here? Oh, in Canada, we call that Mr. Noodle. That's what you said. You're like, in Canada, we call ramen Mr. Okay, we're done. Side noting. No. Too hard. We are moving on. What?
You take everything away from
me. Okay, what do you need to say about Mr. Noodle that I said wrong?
Because I'm a dumb little Canadian kid who's ignorant, and I didn't know it was called ramen until I was like in university. I had Mr. Noodle like every day of my life.
I see. And you just were like, it's
and
serious.
Then I met an American in Australia. Okay, your least favorite things coming together. And then they were like, do you want to get ramen? And I was like, what the absolute
you
hell
mean
are you
Mr.
talking
Noodle.
About?
Okay, fine. That's funny. That's on you. You're embarrassing.
I was like, yeah, you mean Mr. Noodle. And then we went and got a package. I was like, it's not called Mr. Noodle here.
Okay, so digital nomads, I think there is, you know, an excitement if you're in the West and you're of affluence. Like, okay, like, let's pick up. Let's go live in Bali. Let's go live in Barcelona, where we just were, has a big issue with this. A lot of British
people. Wait, where?
Barcelona.
Oh, yeah, we were there.
And Lisbon, Portugal, the Brits are moving in. Mm. And Mexico, there's a huge issue.
Yeah, apparently Mexico City is one of the biggest digital nomad cities. And people consider, like, I think Chiang Mai in Thailand, kind of one of the original
places.
Not digital nomad, but like a place where a lot, because it's like really inexpensive, and a lot of people would go and just like work there and set up shop. And now it's like since the pandemic, even more so.
So in like Mexican beach towns in the Southwest, there was a bunch of them I was reading studies about. So the average salary of the American digital nomads moving in is 5 times higher than the average Mexican salary of those local places. Mm. So this creates an I'm trying to learn about inflation. And I was like, oh, here we go. And it creates an inflationary problem because the demand is now outweighing the supply of residences, which makes sense. You're in a beach town. There's not that many places. Yeah. So that creates
pressure for the prices to go up.
Yes. And they've gone up so fast that the locals are then expelled from where they're living. Whereas I think a lot of people think, oh, we're digital nomads. We're helping the economy. Mm-hmm. Almost immediately in these places, it was the complete opposite. There was like, they're now like trying to figure out how to like almost have movements to ensure that,
like they're protected as because local communities.
What happened in these 5 beach towns is that the Mexican people living there were first displaced, completely evicted. And then because the demand was so high, they started to just literally like bulldoze all the buildings to make high rises.
Right.
And essentially create like Starbucks. Coming, and it's like,
like
and it's
basically
all
like
digital
destroying
nomad
the
influence.
Actual culture that was there.
Yeah.
For like a sanitized version that suits North American or Western sort of like views of community.
And it's like interesting for those places because they're so small. We'll get into like Barcelona and bigger cities because it's like obviously there's issues, but it's different when it's like a small beach town in Mexico and they actually fully displace everyone.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's not good.
It is interesting because obviously on the surface, if you think about doing it yourself, it seems exciting. And it is like, okay, this could be so fun. And yeah, there is, it's easy to be like, and my money is going to go support, like, yes, I might be more affluent, but I can like spend money in these communities and I'm helping and I'm not like hurting anyone. And my money's not, is coming from somewhere else. So I'm actually bringing like Canadian dollars with me and spending them in a different country. So in that way, it's not like I'm siphoning the money from their own country. And you know what I mean?
But when you start to live there,
yeah,
it creates an issue.
I think it's just interesting because tourism is such a integral part for many countries' economies. Like some countries depend on tourism as like their main source of, their main sources of revenue.
This talks a lot about how people aren't staying in hotels. Hotels were an important part of these beach towns because it would siphon the tourists to the hotels and it wouldn't be taking over the actual living quarters. Yeah.
But people now want like the experience of
living. Yeah, if you're a digital nomad, right? You're not living in a hotel.
You want to like have a kitchen and you want to like feel like you're around local people.
But you also wouldn't, that's not what digital nomads are, renting places. They're not staying in hotels because if you stay in a hotel for 6 months, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, that was an interesting
thing. They're
taking rentals. There was a part about hotels. Like the people were like, no, we had tourism. We were into tourists who were in those hotels over there for a week.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you're like competing in the rental market, which is obviously then going to raise rents. If you have five times the disposable income to then be like, well, I'm going to like pay for this one that's relatively cheap to me. Yeah. But of course, then like the local like landlords or whatever are going to be willing to like raise their prices that people
and
will pay for.
In fairness, a lot of digital nomads in one survey I read were leaving major cities like New York, London, Toronto for these places
that problem.
To escape the fact that they couldn't live the life that they wanted in these expensive cities. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of interesting. It was like, oh, they're not maybe just necessarily moving there because they're so rich or whatever. Sometimes they're like, we're struggling in New York.
But my salary can go so much further.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that's interesting. Like I just thought
it's
was like about
the experience.
It's not
necessarily just like the most affluent people, but relative to the local communities they're going to, they're probably considered very affluent.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like you have to be in a certain category to be able to consider this at all.
Yeah.
In North America, I think like you're not like taking people who are struggling. They're not the ones who are, like, they don't even have the ability to go.
Yeah.
You have
to
be, like, somewhat middle class to be able to go, like, I'm going to pay for a plane and organize my way to get there and, like, have a job that allows me to work remotely. Like, most lower wage work isn't remote.
Yeah, that's true. Like, you're going to be working on... Yeah, that's so true.
But it makes sense that you're not necessarily, like...
But in, like, Medellin, Colombia, where we lived for 3 months... there were so many digital nomads and so many people would be like, are you guys digital nomads? And because we're pieces of shit who like are really bad at working and we weren't working for 3 months. We're like, no,
it was our 10-year anniversary trip of our job.
No, I know. But it's just funny. It's like people be like, oh, you're digital nomads. We're like, nope, we're actually just not working for 3 months. And they're like, okay, like what? And it's like, I kind of felt, not that there was judgment about digital nomads, but I felt better saying I wasn't a digital nomad when I was in Medellin.
When you're there,
like,
you start to realize there is a way that people might think of you. Same with just like being a tourist. Like sometimes local populations can be annoyed by tourists because tourists can be really intense. And so I think it's that it kind of has a bit of a stain on it to be a digital nomad. Like, yes, on one hand could be cool, but I'm sure there are lots of local people who are seeing the direct impacts that are a little bit annoyed.
Well, Medellin was super interesting because unlike a place like Barcelona, which I have like, I guess I'm confused when to talk. I'll talk about it now. But Barcelona's really struggling with this. But they're a major historical city where a lot of... there was like really funny parts about a survey of Spanish people being like, these digital nomads are coming and contributing nothing to the culture of this city. Which I was like, drag them to hell. Like that Barcelona's different. They're like, okay, we get it. We're a sick city. We're beautifully designed. Yeah. We get that you want to come here. We also are having... like, it's cheaper here. We're an amazing city. They're coming. They're making... They talked about the Poblenou neighborhood, like the one above the gay beach that we were at. Remember that? Like, he took us to that neighborhood that was, like, used to be a swamp and, like, kind of is, like, being gentrified. How that neighborhood is, like, so frustrated with digital nomads. Mm. But it was interesting because they were, like... yes, like now a beer costs more and our rent's more, but they're like, at least like be cool. Like they had these really right. funny.
Like if you're gonna like, show up here, like yeah, be a
they're
cool
like
person.
We're freaking like cool ass Spanish people who have like really interesting culture, but you're like coming here and you're bringing like with you Starbucks yeah. and you're bringing with you like yeah. some like basic.
You're Americanizing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. yeah, like and I was like, that is so interesting. North Americans have a culture that mm. Europeans are like. What are you doing? You're now making it's worse.
Yeah.
Whereas in Medellin, it's like, okay, that's a city that has really in recent years had a lot of turmoil. Mm-hmm. Like unlike Barcelona, I think that there at first might have been a bit of like, this is exciting. There's tourists coming back here.
Right.
We are.
Yeah.
But I now think, we have to figure out how we deal with
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Like I obviously as a Canadian don't want to justify digital nomadism in Colombia or Medellin. Or
no,
even
it's a
tourism,
huge issue
but obviously, like on the one hand, you have it. It was like only a few decades ago one of the most dangerous places in the world. Obviously, the fact that tourists are going there is at least a good sign and is transforming the economy and transforming like the safety of certain areas. And I think that's a good thing. But obviously, like there's trade offs, right?
Well, I think that's
and
why I'm like digital.
It's not for us to decide. I think it's like the local communities have to decide what is actually best for them.
But reading about digital nomadism, I'm like, it's a huge issue. Like in Medellin, they're not there. They're really happy with tourism. They're not happy with digital nomads. Like they're creating those, like from what I was reading, there's all these.
Yeah, but sometimes it's a blurred line between being a tourist and a digital nomad. Like,
no,
for example,
living in Colombia
for Medellin,
6 months.
Like the neighborhood we stayed in when we were there, just years before the pandemic, they were like, this was not this busy. Like these streets weren't closed down for pedestrians. Like it's become so popular. The rents have skyrocketed in this neighborhood because it's where all the tourists know. It's like kind of the safe area. That's like lots of tourists around. It's busy all the time. So you don't have to be as worried.
And the nightlife is crazy.
Yeah, and it's wild nightlife. Obviously, in one hand, that's a good thing. But I think like there's not always such a distinction between a tourist and a digital nomad, even though they may be contributing differently. And from like a governmental level, there might be like specific definitions. And as we come across more research, we might be able to see a tourist provides this and takes this and a digital nomad provides this and takes this.
I just think about rents. Like in Medellin, they were talking about.
But tourists can still do short-term rentals.
I know, but for the most part,
like tourists are doing Airbnb.
Yes, Airbnb.
And Airbnb is displacing the rental market.
Yes, you're right.
Because people can make more from it. And so they rent, they buy a place and they go, instead of renting this out long term, I'm going to rent it out 3 days here, 5 days here, 10 days here.
Yeah, that's true.
For way more money. So I don't think, like, I know, I don't disagree that they are separate things, but they definitely blurred lines.
Do you have any studies? I was just going to keep
going. Yeah, no, okay. Well, I thought I'd like talk a little bit, too, about the impact on the nomads and then the impact on the countries.
Wait, the impact on the,
so,
like
the person who's gone
from,
somewhere, yeah.
Let's picture, like,
we'll say Canadian, because
like,
you want to say an Australian. I know you do so bad.
Okay, picture a Canadian who looks like an Australian. I'm kidding. Literally just picture
so you.
Me. Yeah, you're getting like some like blonde ass idiot with a red face if he has one pint. Going to, should we do Colombia or is that like two?
It doesn't matter. I don't have specific country
stats.
Oh,
I'm trying to be like, I thought you were talking about like my new lifestyle.
No, well, I just have some stats about digital
nomads.
Oh, nomads,
okay, yeah.
The people themselves.
He's like, they're Australian looking.
No, so digital nomads are the most satisfied workers out of every kind of worker.
Okay.
So 80% of digital nomads report being highly satisfied and 9% report being satisfied with their work compared to only 59% of workers who are non-digital nomads consider themselves highly satisfied.
Okay, yeah, the
shit's
gonna grow.
So obviously there's like a part of it that like fulfills you. If you're going somewhere else, you get to do your job, but you're also having this secondary experience, which is making you feel fulfilled.
And it probably makes you be like, oh, my job's so cool. It's allowing me to do this cool thing. And it makes you probably realize your job isn't the end of the world. I feel like the one thing I learned from traveling
mean,
is
it
like
means your job isn't your most important thing.
Exactly.
Probably.
It's like, don't care about your job. Like when you travel, you're like, wow, everyone's just like a human. And it probably makes you just be like, I'm doing my job. And then I'm going to go have ramen in Canada, aka Mr.
You mean
Noodles. Noodle.
Tiny little side note. Did you listen to the recent happiness slob?
Yeah, about making friends at work.
Yeah. And part of it I thought was like kind of problematic, not in like a cancelable way. I just kind of like the premise. If you
they
listen,
still do better, help
I love
too. They
love,
still do better, help.
Okay,
ads.
But I love the Happiness Lab. Like I'm not trying to drag. It's like one of my favorite. Podcasts.
Me too. I just find it weird they do better help ads. I'm like, you're the. Anyways, continue.
Yeah, they're like basically a therapy.
Yeah, it's just weird. But
the premise was like this one girl realized, like, you should not put your work, like, she found, did all this research that was like, stop trying to make friends at work. Like, Gen Z's realized you don't need to, like, work's taking advantage of you, make your friends outside work. But yeah, then the whole premise of the episode was like, actually your work relationships are what make you the most happy. But it was kind of, and I didn't disagree with the final thesis, but a lot of it was skimming over this idea that, like, often your work doesn't give a shit about you. Maybe the your companions, yeah, and coworkers, it's worth like making friends with them, but like it kind of ignored this bigger part that, like, at the end of the day, your work is exploiting you, or yeah, or like it will cut you if it has to. Anyway,
wait, you thought that it, I thought that most of it was saying don't make friends at work,
but by the end
that guy,
she's kind of like, yeah, and she realized her research was wrong and mine was right. Like, she literally says that at the, yeah, end. She's like, you got to focus on your work friends.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I'm not saying you shouldn't try and have friends at work, but like they really reel it back around and go like, all that other research is wrong.
Oh my God, I love that. And it's like, also like, it's just
she literally,
like,
ends by going, and I was right.
Yeah, I know. And she is so funny because she is one of those
people. I love
people.
Her.
I love her too, but she is definitely one of those people who has work friends. You know yeah, what I mean? Like, she's always like,
my biggest issue is that I only sleep 2 hours a night because I'm constantly working. And like, maybe I get to go see a movie once a month with my kid. What?
So
like,
she's how just do like, I be happier?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, there's so many. And like, it's always like a guy from Stanford coming in being like, I'm a workaholic. But yeah,
but I bring that up to say, like,
deeply,
it's interesting that digital nomads are on surveys at least much happier because probably their work-life balance is better.
Yeah.
And I guess that was like Lori Santos is the happy list lab. I think her argument was like, you already have to spend so much time at work, you can get a lot out of having
but
friends.
Now if you're not even going into work and you're just on your, yeah, computer, I'm like, I don't want a Zoom friend. I exactly did that in the pandemic and it was hell.
Who was your Zoom friend?
When we had to like, when I had a fucking cocktail hour and we like played games on Zoom, it's like, that's absolute hell. I'm not going back there.
Fair. I thought you meant like you had a work friend on Zoom. But they no, said people who are most satisfied work at work have a work best friend. Okay. A few other facts. So since, like, okay, how do I say this? It says nomads who plan to continue as digital nomads over the next 2 or 3 years has declined. Since like starting in 2020,
they're probably starting
because
to be
like, a lot of offices are now like you actually have to come to work,
yeah,
once or twice
a week.
A
yeah
week. So like there's this give and take, and it's coming they back think it's kind of dropping because of that like pressure to go back to the office.
Gotcha.
So also an interesting stat: 14% of digital nomads do not tell their employer that they're doing it. So like
what?
They are somewhere else.
They have that background that's like,
yeah,
gray,
exactly,
but it's actually,
yeah,
Bali.
We know someone who kind of did that, don't we? Or maybe I didn't. Maybe they did tell their job. But I feel like we've met people who are just like, yeah, my job doesn't know I'm here right now.
Oh, that's different to the people I'm thinking of. We were like traveling with them.
Yeah.
Not like
but
digital
I think,
nomad living
like
somewhere
every day. Yeah.
Being so, like, oh my God, the traffic in LA is horrible. But they're like in Mexico City.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. So those are my little
so
facts.
So 14% of digital nomads are liars.
Well, or maybe they just know that, whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, I
you
guess it's
you
true. If you're
able to get all your work
want
done
you to come in and you're doing your work.
I think that would be their argument, but they're probably like, if I say something, it's going to be a problem. So yeah, I'll just keep doing my work from here.
Okay, so now I'm going to talk about Puerto Rico. It was funny, like, okay, the articles I found were Puerto Rico, Medellin, and Barcelona. I'm like, wow,
as
those
the
are
top
the three.
Three
yeah, like, it was just me Googling, and I was like, those are the three places we've been.
In the last, like,
but
year.
I was like, at least, like, if I had been digital nomads in all three, and those were my top three Google results, I would have been like, fuck. But, okay, so Puerto Rico, there's a big issue since the pandemic, because they have this, like, tax
incentive.
It's kind of crazy that like now all these Puerto Ricans are like, we can't have this because the locals don't get the tax incentive, but the people
it was
who
like
are,
to encourage yeah, outside money to come
also
in.
Same with Spain and Barcelona. Spain has this digital nomad 6 month, like they the actual government incentivized like British people and people to come. Right. So now that like there's like all this graffiti in Barcelona that's like digital nomads go home. It's kind yeah of the Alberta thing of the
yeah
the British guys probably like, wait, there was a sign that yeah that's Spain, we want you to come. Like, you know what I mean? Like there is like
right, like we were actually advertised by your country to show up here and given a visa or given like some incentive to come. Yeah, I think like we're at the beginning stages of this digital nomadism. And I think governments are figuring out how to do it. And I think people are as well. Like, people aren't overly educated about it. I think yeah more people will start to realize, okay, how do I do this, like, ethically if I'm going to
yeah
do it?
You don't want to be, like, the, like, digital nomad.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, on the surface, it sounds like a fun thing, but you have to, I think, stop, check like your privilege. Obviously, you have to be privileged enough to be able to do that, and then like realize where you are.
So, like, but the back to the Puerto Rico thing, it was that when you go to the island, you are exempt from paying income and capital gains taxes on the passive income you earn. And this tax break isn't available for local or existing residents of Puerto Rico. So many Americans are now like buying like places in Puerto Rico, working there. Like, we've been to Puerto Rico. The beaches are it's a good lifestyle. And so, because the fact that office work is like so like much less common, they saw such an influx of wealthy investors, new workers, digital nomads moving in to have a beachside life and then take the tax breaks for non-residents. So now they're like, okay, it's making it unaffordable for us actual residents. Bad Bunny wrote a song about this.
Well, I had seen in some places like Chiang Mai, like a lot of foreign investors, like you said, buy up property, but they market themselves as though you're staying at a local person's home. And so that money is not even going to that country at the end of the day. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, tricking you into a short-term rental.
Well, when we went to Medellin, the guy that owned our place
was... Yeah, we realized later he didn't live there.
He lived in the Caribbean island somewhere else, and I was like... You're from here, right? And he's like, I love visiting. And I was like, oh my God, I want to saw my leg off.
Yeah. So it's hard to know those things. Like, you can't, unless you explicitly ask, like, are you? Because the person who is managing it there lived there, but obviously they're not the one who owned it.
No.
Like, or we couldn't have known that until we met them. My research on the impact on the host country, so like, it is so new in this mass way, right?
Yeah.
So it says like a lot of the relationship is underexplored. There's not a lot of research, but what there is that it can facilitate gentrification, obviously, as we've already discussed. But it can also lead to innovation and other benefits to the local economy. Obviously.
Oh yeah, like you're gonna get a sick new yoga studio, that's for sure.
Well, that was a really interesting thing that I'm gonna get to soon. Maybe I'll just say it now. One of the biggest problems with digital nomads is that they actually create communities within communities.
Yes, totally.
And that means they're not actually engaging with the local community.
Remember when we went to like that gay pre-drink and then we found out it was like a digital nomad meetup and it was like no one here I want to meet an Argentinian so bad but I like can't.
So it says this is like that big study. It was like this was a review that was pulling from lots of other studies. Privileged immigrants build enclaves or insular communities where they have little interaction with local communities. And this was a quote. It said, instead of immersing themselves in local cultures, they move within the bohemian Western alternative space. And rather than being at home everywhere, they are with people who share their lifestyle and values. Huh. It is thus not simply migration to a specific place, but migration to a specific alternative social scene that exists in various places.
That's what the Barcelona survey was saying. It was literally people being like,
you're like,
fine, come to Poble Nou. Actually, they probably are like not even saying that. They're probably like, don't come to Poble Nou, this neighborhood. But at least bring us something by joining what we're doing, not
contribute
doing
to our community. I think so. What it did say is a lot of digital nomads don't know how to get involved with the local community. There's probably language barriers. There's probably like cultural barriers where you're like, you might feel guilty, you might feel out of place. Whereas others argue that nomads actively seek to keep their distance to keep it exotic. Like, it's part of the appeal that you're like somewhere different and they're like the different people that are surrounding
you. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's weird. Okay. But I could imagine like a lot of people go to places where they don't know the language that well. And so then that is such a limiting factor that they're looking for people who only speak English.
Yeah, okay, the language, definitely. But you know what? I feel so... I'm just like, you know, didn't sleep well. I'm in a bad mood. And like, whenever I watch like a fucking YouTube video... Yeah, I'm a YouTuber who's like, this platform's a mess. But whenever I sadly watch a YouTube video and it's like about travel, I'm like, this is the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen. Because they'll be like, oh my God. Like, you can come here and there'll be this cafe for you and there's yoga. Like, they start
they're
being
promoting
like,
the things that are literally like you
the
have
reason
at home.
Why digital nomads are slaying it in Barcelona is because it's affordable and you can have your Starbucks. Like, and they just start saying all the things that like I hate about Toronto,
But like you, in yeah, there, you have access to like, everywhere.
North why America. Are you needing to do that if you're in, like, why the fuck did you go to Barcelona yeah, then?
It's true. Like it's literally. Like, if you're going to be a digital nomad, don't you want to go because you want to be somewhere else? Otherwise, just. And that's where it comes back to what you're saying. Yeah. Some people are doing it to escape the pricing challenges of
so
home.
They want their lifestyle of home. They want to be like yeah. somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's.
And that's what these studies found is obviously that's what happens yeah. to those neighborhoods. Like,
and to be fair, when we do travel, we are tourists. Like even when we live in Colombia for 3 months, like we don't work and we act like tourists in a way where I'm like, we do seek out the local things because that's to us what tourism is. If I was stuck somewhere or in this case chose to live somewhere for 6 months, I might start to go, fuck, I need... That's when you start to go like, I need my
like you
home.
Miss your life. Like, yeah. The, yeah. And then you're the like, comforts
you're
of
like,
home.
Oh,
yeah.
awkward. I'm actually going to Starbucks every day. Oops.
Yeah. And even just like.
Because we never feel that pressure.
It's hard to make new habits and break old habits. So if you love like the way your gym is, if you mm-hmm. love going to yoga, you're going to be searching for those things.
I was actually annoyed when I was in Europe where I was like, I need a parfait. I was like,
Isn't that breakfast. Like where parfaits are from?
Oh, sorry. I'm like, I need oatmeal and yogurt. I cannot eat a croissant and a coffee. Like, it's like, I would start being like,
I can eat anything for breakfast.
Yeah, I know.
I love a savory breakfast.
Me too.
No, you don't.
No, yeah, you're right.
You don't have a sweet breakfast.
Sorry, no, but I don't like a chocolate croissant. I don't know why.
I mean, I didn't like, really want a chocolate croissant, but you said it was hard. Like, I remember in India, it was extra hard for you. Not that after a while, I was like, I can't keep having curry every single day.
Was really hard for breakfast because it was dal. It was like...
But I loved that at first until I, you know, we were there. We were in India a long time. Yeah, and also I am Indian.
But so. I'm just like, I think that like... I could see if I was a digital nomad starting to fall into wanting those comforts of home. And that's like the tension where mm-hmm. this is, where it's like, well, then why the fuck don't you go home?
Yeah.
Because I think if you're a culture and if you're being displaced from your neighborhood, even in a wealthy city like Barcelona, then it's like, I can only imagine what's going to happen in Mexico or Colombia if this isn't controlled.
Like, Barcelona is a wealthy city, but it's all relative, right? So, yeah. like, when we were there, people were like, the average salary in Barcelona is not that high. But yeah. then, of course, the cost of living is, while becoming harder, it's, like, more in range with people's salaries. So, if you're, like, an American coming with these huge salaries, or Canadian, or anyone.
Or British.
Like, you're arriving and inflating everything.
Yeah.
So, like... Yeah, it just makes sense that even though Barcelona is a very affluent place, it's all relative yeah, to like
what that's what I thought was so interesting because you're walking around, you're seeing Loewe, you're seeing these gorgeous streets, this like luxury stuff. But at the same time, there's also like all these really like local neighborhoods and these like beautiful apartments that are just like maybe were inexpensive 4 years ago. And now, you know, Barcelona's an absolute slay. Mm-hmm. So people are moving there from across the world. And that's what they were saying to mm-hmm. us was the issue with cost of living was digital nomads. That's how it was explained to us. Yeah. It's like, that sucks. Like, that is actually an issue.
And I mean, my only argument to that is I don't doubt that's contributing, but I think every local economy right now, including our own, is seeing extreme struggles with like cost of living. And it might be easier for them to go, well, it's the fucking digital nomads.
Yeah.
But it's like actually everywhere in the world is having this like really shrinking middle class. And that's not to say they are wrong.
Are there digital nomads in Toronto?
Probably. Yeah,
but the thing about Toronto that's so interesting is that it's so diverse. Like, it's the most multicultural city in the world. So you can't feel this tension of tourists ever.
Like, you're not nearly as aware of it.
Because I'm like, who's a tourist? Like, you know what I mean? Like, anyone could be a tourist. The only time I've ever, like, because I love tourists in Toronto because I'm obsessed with Toronto, want people to like it. Like, if I see someone holding a map, I'm always like, hey, so, like, what do you want to do? Like, I, like, go up to them, and they're probably, like, Canadians are freakishly nice. But it's when they're holding a map. That's the only time. And nowadays, people don't even do that anymore.
Yeah.
That was more, like, 10 years ago I used to see lots of people. But now it's, like, in Barcelona, Spanish people look a certain way. They have a certain vibe. Even if they're South American.
Well, and they speak Spanish. Like, I think Toronto, most everyone comes as a tourist, like, knowing they have to speak some English.
No, but also in Canada on the subway, everyone's speaking five
languages.
Any
language, you're right. Like, so you don't have language.
This, like, yeah. Whereas in Barcelona, there's a tension towards tourists and digital nomads. In Mexico, there's a tension. In Toronto, if there was a digital nomad community, it's not ruining the city. We're not dealing with that. A, we also can't tell. B, I don't know if it's happening.
I was going to say, we also don't deal with it in the way that some cities have, like, cruise ships arriving at once. And you see huge, like, groups of hundreds of people moving together. And I think it's, like, more visually obvious.
Yeah.
Also, I'm sure downtown Toronto, like, we're far enough from, like, the main bits of the city.
But there is not a conversation in any of our local news. Whereas I was looking up Barcelona, Medellin, local news. It's like there's always something about digital nomads. There's always something about tourists and how to maintain the city's vibrancy and affordability in the midst of that. Whereas in Toronto, it's like, wow, like there's it's just not an issue right now.
Yeah, I mean, Toronto is also one of the most expensive cities in the world.
And I feel like it's what's creating digital nomads.
Yeah, well, it's definitely the expensive cities with high salaries are the ones who export digital nomadism, right? It doesn't mean that there's probably Americans and British people and Australian people who come and are like, I'm going to go live in Toronto for 4 months and just work like from my home job there. But I think like it's actually prohibitive for a lot of people from other countries because it's so expensive. That you're more likely to be a tourist for a week.
To have gone to Europe and have, even with the euro being such a stronger currency than the Canadian dollar, have the cities be cheaper than in Toronto.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like Toronto is so expensive. It's kind of wild.
Back to the impact on just like research has found. It says ethnographic research suggests that digital nomads are not really contributing their skilled labor to local economies where they temporarily reside.
Because they're doing their work for the company.
But some of the idea was maybe they come and like are providing like unique labor and like who knows what they be. Like you could you could have a certain kind of skill that maybe could be useful in your community. True. Like, oh, you're a digital nomad because maybe you're self-employed. Maybe you do like some kind of work that you can do anywhere. Like,
yeah.
So overall the finding is like that's not being contributed. Obviously, like money does come in, so it goes to local businesses and cafes. Yeah, like there is some advantage, but like you said, a lot of those transform to the tastes of the nomads.
Yeah.
And
also, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. This was just like talking about Mexico City. It says, of the 10,000 apartment listings on Airbnb in Mexico City, the average price is 1450 pesos a day, while 95% of Mexicans only earn 518 pesos a day.
Oh, wow.
So it's like just showing the discrepancy between what a local person could afford as a daily rate versus like what they're being listed as is obviously catering. And even for us, like when we were traveling, you realize if you, the thing is, it's actually sometimes difficult to find a short to medium term rental when you're in another country. And until you arrive somewhere, you don't necessarily know like.
That's what people were doing in Medellin. They would get an Airbnb for a week and then find an apartment.
But you realize like how, when you don't know what the prices are, you're willing to spend like something somewhat equivalent to what you'd spend at home,
which is
on
crazy.
An Airbnb. And then you get there and you're like, oh, like we definitely spent a lot more money than we probably should have on an Airbnb.
Totally.
But it's just something that there is that barrier because you don't necessarily know the ways to look it up properly or who to connect with. In some countries, it's easier once you're there. Like a lot of places are like, it's posted locally and you have to like go physically and it's not always just like on a website. The only other thing I want to say is like a lot of countries are starting to manage this. There are now 50 countries that offer digital nomad visas. That doesn't mean I'm not saying it's necessarily
that's
a good
not
thing.
Not necessarily managing it. That's
no,
just
but
allowing
that's,
it.
It's at least becoming like part of that conversation and governments are going to have to start realizing what is this doing to
exactly.
local
populations. This is like, I think it's overall a bad thing. I think honestly, like just as someone who's like observed other cities, kind of just Puerto Rico, Medellin, and Barcelona going, how long do we have a problem? I think a digital nomad visa should have some sort of tax that you have to pay to be there.
Well, that's what the visa you usually pay for, but it's probably
No, these visas are encouraging people to come.
Okay, this is why. It says, why do they want digital nomads? Again, I'm not standing up for this.
The
this
government
is just
might want it.
Yeah, it says the government at all levels realize that digital nomads spend more money than short stay tourists, don't put much strain on public services, create jobs for locals, and even start local businesses. That's like
that's so.
Yeah, it feels like they're going to see the flip side of that now that the communities themselves are being destroyed.
Can't afford.
People aren't going to want to go there when they're like, wait, this is a sterilized version of North America.
Yeah, totally. I think that is like I could see why landlords and the government are like slay. But what I'm thinking is that in order for it to. Oh God, and like, no, I'm not even gonna say trickle down. But in order for it to not have these negative impacts, I think digital nomads should have to pay a tax, a personal tax for the visa, like a substantial like monthly tax that somehow works its way back into like public housing or something like that. Like how, like we pay where our house is a monthly tax for public housing based on the price of our house. It's socialism. It's like,
well, that would be the assumption in the other countries that wherever you're staying, that person is paying a tax.
But it's like, if that is three, if you're charging this person three times the amount, they should be paying that much more in tax to that local, like, just if I was a government, I'd be like, let's do that. And it's not like, I think people would still go. People are still, it's so popular now. People are still going to want to go to Barcelona.
Yeah, I think for sure. Take the digital nomads for not all they're worth. Like, you want them to still come if there's these benefits, but how do you at least even use some of that tax money to support the local community? That's because that will destroy it in the long run. If you find out that Poblado and Medellin is just like a sterilized, like American version of what it was one day, like, eventually you're not looking long term where people are gonna be like, that's not that interesting. I wanted to go somewhere that felt like I was somewhere else.
But actually, Colombia is so interesting because Barcelona is so much more North American. And I remember when we went, like, you know how every goddamn like price pointed restaurant will have like an Aesop soap?
Yeah,
like it's just like, it's like, okay, we're at a kind of nice restaurant because they have like sandalwood soap. That in my head I'm like, this is all so natural. I'm like, is this even killing bacteria or just making my hands smell like a
flower? Just perfume.
Yeah, but like anyways, there's Aesop soap, whatever. Now I bet that's even like outdated. There's like cooler ones, like Yamen and Gertz or whatever. And we were in Colombia at like a restaurant, and I like went into the bathroom and I was like, oh damn it, there was Aesop soap. I was like, wow, like we are in a global world, like even Colombia has an Aesop. And then I like like looked closer and it was like a weird symbol, like an S,
like a
and
knockoff.
Then it was a complete knockoff. And then we went online because I was like, is there an Aesop in Medellin? Like, no, there's not an Aesop in Medellin. Like, there probably will be in a few years, but like at this point. And then we googled and it was like, you can buy on Amazon
just the
Aesop looking soap bottles to put in your fancy ass like restaurant to make it. And it was just like, that's like, they still can't get Aesop in Medellin. Mm-hmm. And like, that is, to me, was like, it was just like funny for me as like a tourist having this moment of like arriving somewhere and being like, there's like, you know what I mean? This globalized, like whatever. It's like, okay, Medellin is definitely a place for digital nomads, but it's still, I don't think, has to deal with the cultural struggle that Barcelona might be dealing with digital nomads.
Yeah.
Right now they're trying to figure out, okay, how do we make sure that like people from Colombia aren't like, how the hell do I afford to live in El Poblado anymore or whatever? Although it was crazy. Just like, there's so many rich people in Medellin too. Like when we went to that mall, that like upscale mall, it was just like a bunch of rich Colombians buying like,
yeah, I mean, crazy, this is the problem. There's still obviously like an upper class.
And yeah, like it's, but it's different in the sense that every other city, when you go to a luxury mall, it's like Fendi, Gucci, Gucci, or whatever it's called. I'm kidding. I know it's called Gucci. Whereas in Medellin, there was like this luxury mall. It didn't have those brands, but it had these like amazing,
more local brands.
Like local
brands. We didn't know what they were. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I wanted to get a gold chain. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'll get a gold chain here. Like, we're like learning about gold. And then I like transferred it and it was like, oh, it's an $800. The cheapest gold chain is $800. And I was just like, okay. Like, put it back. And was just like, whoa, I thought I'd be getting like some sort of like deal. Cause I'm like, I don't know what store this is. And people are buying lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it was wild.
Anyway, overall, I think that
we're going to be moving. I'm kidding. All this to say, no, I think it's an issue. I think that they need to be taxed, and I think it should be something that
hopefully local governments start to figure it out and find a way to balance it with like the needs of the actual people who live there first. Because I could, like, we're so lucky to not, like you said, in Toronto, really have to deal with that. And that would be
so annoying. Yeah. It would be so annoying.
And to be like, why is my government focusing on this?
Yeah.
Like, focus on us.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Slay all day. Talk to you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.